Ja, den 11 mars 1986 jag sitter tillsammans med Anna-Lisa Johnson i Moline, Illinois. Hon var född 1913, den 14 juni.
Juni?
Juni.
Jaha.
I Göteborg.
Ja.
Och kom till Amerika 1921. Och idag är det alltså 11 mars 1986. Well, you were only 8 years old when you came and I don't expect you to talk in Swedish.
Well.
But I know you have pretty good pronunciation. How did you keep the Swedish? You understand Swedish?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I write in Swedish. That's easier than speaking it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, you remember the first year in school anyway, in the first couple of years in school in Sweden?
Yeah, I didn't finish the first grade. Because we left for America, and see.
Oh, do you remember the school, the name of the school in Göteborg?
Oh, no. I don't remember the name, but I know where it is. But I don't remember the name.
Were you the only child in the family?
No, I was the oldest.
Oldest, I see. And there were smaller ones then.
Yeah, we were five of us.
Five?
But we were only three when we came over. And then, like my brother Bill used to say, he was imported. And then my youngest sister, she was born in Lynn.
So one stayed with the relatives then in Göteborg when you went with your parents over?
No, we all came over.
We all came over?
Yeah, all came over at once.
And your dad, what was he working with?
He was a carpenter.
Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
And what made him decide not to go to the United States? Was it,
well, see, he had two brothers here and one sister. One sister lived in Lynn, that's why we went there. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have any children. And so we stayed there with them. In fact, we lived in their house, you know, until my dad could find work. Mm-hmm. And then we rented a little house there in Lynn.
Lynn, Massachusetts?
Yep.
And your uncle's name was, it was Bergström?
Uh-huh. That was, well, see, it was my aunt. That was
oh,
his
aunt,
it. Yeah, it was my aunt. That was his sister. Her name was Elin Adele. And then he had two brothers in Minnesota. We went to see them before we settled in Lynn, and that was up in where was that? My land. I think I'm getting old and forgetful. But anyway, it was up in Minnesota there. Owen. What was the name? I'd have to call my cousin and find out what the name was. Owatonna.
Owatonna?
Yeah, Owatonna.
The southern part of.
I don't know where it
close
is.
Close to Albert Lee.
That could be. Yeah, that's near there where they farmed. Or my uncle Carl, he had a farm there.
Well, they were farmers in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them were farmers.
How come they settled down there? You came from Göteborg and city kids?
Well, I don't know. They'd been over here longer than my dad, see. So.
But you went back. Do you remember the trip over then? You came with Kungsholm? Or
no, Stockholm. Stockholm. That was the last trip that boat made.
The old Stockholm?
Yeah.
Oh. Last trip.
Yep.
So how was that last trip with that boat? Was it?
It was in September, and it was stormy all the way.
Uh-huh.
It was. It took us 10 days. And that was a long time on the
direct
water.
Direct from Göteborg to New York.
To New York, right?
Uh-huh. And were you more relation together only your family? And the rest of them were unknown to you on the boat, in other words, you were the only one.
Yeah, we were the only ones that we had to go to Ellis Island, too.
So tell me a little bit about that, when you came into Ellis Island. Do you remember anything?
Well, see, it was my dad's sister that met us there. I think it was, or did we take the train from there? I believe we took the train to Lynn. But all I remember is that it was hot. It was real hot that year in this country, and she wanted to give us ice cream cones, you know, and we didn't know what that was. And I remember how good that was, and that was the first thing I had in this country,
right.
An ice cream cone, yeah.
It went on fast in the heat.
Yeah, they sure did.
So you had no trouble then with the inductive examination or anything?
No, we just had to stay there on Ellis Island for, well, we didn't stay overnight or anything. We just, they examined you, I guess.
Oh. Did your aunt meet you at Ellis Island or in New York?
I think it was in, it seems to me that we took a train, you know, from New York because they lived in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's what we did.
So then you came to a new country and your dad, he had to look for a job.
Yeah. He went to evening school because he had to learn to speak English, you know, so he went to evening school. And he got work right away because there was jobs to be had then.
And you rented a house then to start with in Lynn?
Well, we lived with his sister and my uncle or her husband there. I don't know how long. I suppose like a few months.
And then you started school in the... you started school...
I had to start school in Lynn there right away, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was...
It was not easy, I
No. I remember the name of that school. That was Aborn. School. And it wasn't too far. My aunt took me the first time to school, you know, and I didn't understand one word of English. And the teacher, she explained to the teacher, you know, that we'd just come over. And the teacher took me and put me in front of the class. And later my aunt told me what they said, you know, but I didn't know what they said. And she said, now this is a new girl that's come from, all the way from Europe, from Sweden. And she does not understand English. And they said, are we going to make fun of her when she tries? And the whole class said, no. And then she said, are we going to help her learn our language? And they all said, yes.
You understood that?
Yeah, I know. I didn't know what they were yelling. Or I had no idea.
How about yes or no? Did you understand those?
I got smart, you know, because I didn't know what yes or no, I didn't know how to connect it in Swedish, but in Swedish, you know, it's ja for yes.
Yes.
And I figured that sounded about the same, and no and nay, you know, that started with N, so I figured that out.
So that was the beginning in English language?
That was the beginning, yes and no.
And your sister, now the other sister, brothers you had, they were not old enough to start the school?
No.
So you were alone then?
I was alone in school.
Uh-huh.
But they told me that in less than a year I could speak and understand, you know, English real good. So, I mean, it wasn't... Of course, kids learn fast.
So you might help your mother and father then with some words when you came home from school?
I sure did. I had to. And, you know, I was going to speak Swedish or English at home. And my mother, she said, Ute får du tala engelska, men när du kommer innanför dörren här så är det svenska.
Hon var noga med det?
Ja, because she was, well, let's see, did she have Billy then? No, I don't think she had Billy yet, my brother. She was pregnant and she couldn't get out much, you know.
Easy school either then?
No, she couldn't. So
that took time for her to pick
up? Took a lot of time. And you know, out east there, in the east, they had a lot of salesmen come to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come and knock on the door, and of course my mother couldn't understand a single word. So if I was home, like on a Saturday and that, or mm-hmm. after school, and she'd holler for me to come and see what they wanted, and then I had to translate to her and translate in English to the salesman. But she learned real quick too. She asked me how to say, you know, no thank you, I don't want anything. And when she knew it was a salesman, that's the first thing she told him, bang the door.
So she learned fast.
Yeah, because there was a lot of them. There were a lot of salesmen, all kinds of them.
So they sold different household goods then for the home, or what did they sell?
Well, they sold brushes, they sold groceries, they sold...
Groceries?
Yeah, and they sold creams, you know, soap and stuff. There was a salesman there then that sold like fish on Fridays, you know, they would come in with new catch of fish And that she always bought stuff like that because she was a wonderful cook.
So she learned then to handle the money.
Oh, she couldn't fool her on 1 cent. And out there, there was, well, I guess they said it was Jewish people. I don't know, but they really tried to cheat you if they knew you were a foreigner, even if it was just a couple of pennies.
Well, they wouldn't tell you that you were mistaken.
No. They would shortchange you. And I always had to go to the store because I was the oldest, and that store wasn't very far from us at all. And my mother, she knew, I don't know how she knew the price. I guess the price was on the groceries. And she knew what she sent with me, and she would count the change. And I know one time he just got a bang out of, you know, our whole family because we couldn't speak English. And it was 2 cents short. And my mother, she said, "You go down there and tell Mr. Rush that he owes me 2 pennies. And I said, "I don't want to, I'm too embarrassed." But I had to. So I went down there and I told him. And he says, "Boy, your mother," he said, "she can't speak a word of English, but she sure knows her money."
She gave him a lesson, though.
Yeah, she sure did. And he never tried to cheat. If he did, she was right there to, even on 1 penny. But because, you know, in those days, 2-3 pennies was money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Your father, now, he went to school, and he went to work,
yeah,
so he could use English then every day.
Already. Well, he had a very bad accent, but he could make himself understood, and he understood the people, you know. Yeah.
Did he work then for the company or for another construction?
No, he worked building and, he worked for other people.
As a carpenter?
Yeah, but then he finally got his own business, so he built houses and things.
Well, his own construction firm?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
Well, not right away. It took a few years. But he was building and then he bought, well, there was a big house there in Lynn, and then it was a small cottage in the back that he rented out, and then we rented out, it was a double house. We lived upstairs, and then we had people downstairs that we rented out to. So he did real good.
So he went into business with himself,
yeah,
then?
Yeah. And then when the Depression came, you know, that was in about, it started out there about 28, where they didn't have much work.
Well, it started early, though.
Yeah, it did. It started around 28. And then he had a brother that had lived in Minnesota. He had moved here to Moline, and they were writing, you know, corresponding, and I remember Carl, he said, "Oh, just come on out here," he said, "there's plenty of work, there's no sign of any let up or anything." So my dad, he was an adventurous soul anyway, he said, "Well, let's sell and go out there." So we did. I think it was a 1926 a 25 Chevy, packed 5 of us in that thing. Five kids and my mother and dad, and all the running board on one side, it was all packed with stuff, you know. We couldn't go out that one side on the back at all. My dad could get out on his side, and then we could get out on this other side. And I often think of that, just think how, and that was what, 1,300 miles.
And there was all your belongings on that car then?
Everything.
There was nothing left?
No.
He sold the...
We sold everything.
Furniture?
Yeah. Everything.
So it was real bad then in Boston?
Oh, yeah. It was getting worse. It was getting harder and harder to get work.
See? Well, did your mother take the work then during that time, late 20s?
No, she didn't.
She didn't go up to the outside home?
She didn't... she had... I don't know or was that here? Well, I think it was a relative of hers, of ours, that roomed and boarded with us, but that was the only one. But then when we came here to Moline, my dad built a house for us, because it was good, really good working here in 28.
How about the school? Now, you finished with high school?
Oh, no.
No.
I came into, let's see. It was in 21 that I started first grade. I think I came probably in the sixth grade, I think it was, I started here. Because, see, as I learned the language, I had to start in the first grade, and as I learned the language, then they moved me ahead. So I was 8 years old, and to start in the first grade, that was...
You were 2 years late then,
huh? Yeah, but I caught up. So the teachers helped me. I didn't, they were very nice to me, the teachers.
So when you came to Molina, you were full-fledged American.
My dad took out the papers. After he had been here 5 years, he had to be here 5 years, and he took out the papers, and all us kids became citizens on that. And my mother, they thought my mother was too, and she thought she was, and she voted.
she wasn't a citizen?
She was not a citizen. They didn't know that, but they understood, I guess, that we all became citizens.
Well, she didn't go with them to the judge or to the court?
No. And when we came here, I don't know how they found out. Because they asked her when she became a citizen, I guess. And then she said, when my dad became one, well, that doesn't make you one. And she says, well, I've been voting. But she had to take out her own papers then. Mm-hmm. So
you came to Molina in 1928?
Mm-hmm. In the fall.
And your uncle now from Minnesota, why did he move? He moved away from the farm then?
Yeah.
He sold the farm in Owatonna?
Yeah, he did.
Mm-hmm. Was it also starting to get bad then in farming? Or why?
I don't know. That I really don't know. But see, he had five girls, and he didn't feel he had a son, I guess, to help him in that. But
was he older than...
Yeah, my dad was the youngest. And Uncle Bill, he was the oldest, and then it was Uncle Carl, and then my dad. Well, my aunt was really the oldest of them all, I guess, my Aunt Ellen.
So he and his family, they were already in Molina at that time, mm-hmm. You came to them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
they lived then further downtown?
They lived, I don't know where they lived, but they had a house. And then we all moved in there for just a few weeks, until you could get something. And we had, I think my dad... We moved out, but then he built that house. It's up on 26th Avenue there, and between 7th Street and 5th Street. It's a nice little house. But then the hard times came here too, so he had to sell, and they bought a big old house down on 18th Street here in Moline. It was a big, big house, and my mother took in roomers and boarders. I think she had, it was 10 or 12 men. They worked in the shop, And
they ate there?
They ate there. She cooked for them. She ate. No, I don't think she washed for them. No, that thing she didn't do. But she baked, and she made breakfast for them. And then she sent lunch with them in their lunch buckets, and then had supper for them at night.
Boy, that was a threshing table, right?
Oh, I tell you, that was work. We had a dining room table at... Oh, there was no end to it. And she worked hard. And I had to do the dishes most of the time.
You were involved also.
Yeah.
You couldn't avoid it.
No, but it was...
And those boarders, were they Swedish young men?
Most of them were, and some weren't. But some... There was an old man that belonged to the Salvation Army. He was Danish. His name was Jensen. And... he didn't have anybody. She took kind of care of him. But he worked down at that Dimmock and Gould in the lumber yard there. And I remember he never liked to take a bath, but she would just go and get up there every Saturday night and run the water. And she washed for him. She did, because she wanted him to be clean, and he didn't care if he sweat or not, So she says, now Jensen, you go in there and you take your bath, and there's clean underwear for you, and you just wash good.
Well, she had to.
She told him. Yeah, but she was good to him.
The rest of the men on the boarding, did they used to take a bath? Not every day, though.
I don't think so. No, they didn't take a bath every day in those days. Yeah.
And that was that a pretty good income then for the family to.
My dad couldn't get work. He'd go out early in the morning and drive and drive and drive trying to find work. And finally, I don't know if he had other work or not. I really don't. But I know that that was the main income that my mother made there, you know. And one time, he I don't know how he heard about the LeClaire Hotel. He went down there to see if he could, you know, if they had anything for him to do. So they took him in as a maintenance man, you know.
They was already built then, LeClaire Hotel?
Oh, yeah, the LeClaire Hotel. We lived on 18th Street. He could walk down there.
See? Oh, I see.
So he did.
So he got a job then?
He got a job, and then they were going to put new carpeting in there, and they gave him all the old carpeting, and he put that in our house, and it was not bad at all, you know. Cause, and, of course, he had to work and keep up the house, and then we got all those roomers and boarders. Well, then, pretty soon, I don't think my mother could, you know, take it much longer. She did that for a long time. Then he changed it into apartments.
Your house?
Yeah, our house. Not where we were living. We were living downstairs, and then we had a couple of bedrooms upstairs, but there was, I don't know how many rooms there was in that house. But there was, he made three-room apartment, and he made, I think it was a two-room apartment, and they rented that out. So that made it easier on my mother.
You know? So how long did you keep going with the roomers and the boarders?
Oh, let's see.
During the whole depression, or?
Yeah, I don't know what year.
35, 36?
It must have been probably 32 or 33.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there was still a hard time ahead, though, a few years.
Yeah, it sure was.
And your dad now, how long did he keep going at the maintenance job at LeClaire?
Well, it wasn't too long because, well, he worked there 2-3 years, I think. Because he did the carpenter work and stuff like that, and anything I guess they wanted him to do, you know, to have he had a job.
And when you came to Moline, did your family join the Salvation Army then, or attend the Salvation Army?
No, well, we went to the Salvation Army because we had gone in Lynn, you know, we had attended there.
And there was a Swedish corps?
That was a Swedish, we're all Swedish. Yeah, Sunday school and everything was Swedish.
No, did they join the, I mean, did they belong to Francis, I mean, in Sweden?
No. My dad was not a Christian then, and from Lynn, Massachusetts, we moved to Rhode Island. And so we lived there about a year before, because it was better work there, I understand. So we lived there. He had a cousin there in Rhode Island.
Was he in Warwick or?
Yeah, it was not. It was Warwick. I think was the town. Yeah, it was Warwick that we lived in, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was right on the beach. You know, we used to go down there and pick clams and stuff. And we lived there about a year before we moved out here.
And you didn't join any church there?
No, but my dad got saved while we were living in Rhode Island. They had revival meetings in the Mission Church there in, not in Warwick, where?
There was one in Providence, in Pawtucket.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Providence. But anyway, they went in there, and my mother was a Christian, but he wasn't. And then one night he came home, and I had to babysit, you know, when they went anywhere, and he said, put his arms around me, and he says, "Well, you don't have to pray for me anymore now." He said, "I gave my heart to the Lord tonight, and I'm a Christian." And because my mother, you know, she had us kids praying for him, and so he became a Christian, and he was a good Christian. And then but we hadn't joined any church. We went to the army. Us kids went to the Salvation Army in Lynn there. We because they wanted us to go to church, and so we went to a lot. And in those days, the Salvation Army officers, they would visit the homes, you know, and meet the people, meet the Sunday school kids' parents and that. And my mother, I think she had them up at least once a week for supper. you know, for meals.
And then Swedish was spoken?
Oh, yeah. Always Swedish.
So she felt at home then with somebody?
Mm-hmm. And then we came here and we went to the Salvation Army. But my folks had not joined, you know, as soldiers, they call them, in the army. But then my youngest sister, she was born in Lynn. She was born with a club foot. You know, her foot was, you know, you just take it like that and fold it up by her leg. And she had had an operation before we moved from Lynn to straighten that out. So when we moved, she was in a cast from her ankle up to her hip, little, what was she, 2 years old, oh, barely two, I guess. And so that was another handicap to drive all that, those miles in the heat, you know, and then have her like that.
How could they afford to pay now for an operation like that? Did they have any insurance?
I don't know. I suppose they had insurance because they did have, I know the insurance man used to come every week or something, you know, to...
To collect?
Uh-huh.
Was that a Swedish insurance company?
I don't know.
They didn't belong to any lodge?
No.
No fraternal organization?
No. But when they came here, they had to take her to the doctor, you know, and her little foot, that operation wasn't successful because she had to have a sort of a, not a built-up shoe, it was a shoe, you know, with laces in, not a low shoe, but it was a high shoe. And then she'd walk, you know, on the side of it like that. So it was really bad. And then when this church, the Full Gospel Temple, mm-hmm. you know, down there on 23rd Street,
yes.
the man that started that, they came here and had tent meetings. And they believed in praying for the sick and healing. And my mother and dad heard about it, and they decided to take Ellen down there and have her prayed for. And it was something new for the whole city here. We had never heard of anybody praying for sick people. And they explained what it was, you know, that they wanted them to pray for. So it was Reverend Kortkamp and his wife, and it was Mabel Watts, and they laid their hand on Ellen, and they said to my mother, "Do you believe?" They said, "Do you believe that God is able?" And she says, "Oh yes, I believe absolutely He can do it." So they prayed for her, and my mother, she said afterwards, it was just like an electric shock went through her. She said, "I could feel it in my arms and all over," and she said, I knew that something had happened, and she opened her eyes, and she thought that Ellen would be just well right there, and she put her down, and it was her foot was just the same. But the Reverend Kortkamp, he said to her, "Just believe." He said, "The Lord has touched her, and she's going to be all right." And now he says, "You just go home and you thank the Lord for that healing." And it was hard for my mother to do that because she walked just the same. But then, on the third morning, I was upstairs in my room. I was getting ready to go to work, and she called me. She said, "Lisa," she said, "come down here and look at Ellen." And she had put her shoe on, and she was running, and she was trying to walk on the bottom of her foot, you know, right, and she couldn't because that thing was just twisted, you know, the shoe. So she come and she says, "Take my shoe off." She took her shoe off and she ran perfect. Her foot was absolutely healed.
It sounds almost unbelievable.
My mother and I, we sat on her bed there and we just cried. We just cried and cried. Because she had never done this before.
And she was too small to understand.
Oh yeah, about three. And she said, "I knew that the Lord touched her because she said I could feel it." And from then on, and she still got that little shoe my sister has now. They live in California, but
she... So she became well then, able to walk after that?
Yes.
No operation?
No more operation. No. That, to me, it was just, Well, I don't know why I didn't leave the Army and go down there too, but I just felt that I wanted to be in the Salvation Army. But my mother...
Sida 2, det fortsätter på intervju med Anna-Lisa Johnson Molin. Sida 2. But this sounds almost unbelievable, but I better believe it because you were there and you saw
well,
what happened.
I just couldn't believe it myself either. But you know, when I saw it, because I used to put those shoes on her every day, and she just couldn't walk. She said, "My shoe feels funny." She said, "Take it off." So we took it off, and that little foot was just—it was a little thinner, her ankle, because I don't know. I guess it's because she had it in cast, you know, and that. But she was perfectly healed.
This happening, how did it become known?
Wrong,
so there was...
Then they asked, I don't think it was in the paper, I don't know. They didn't put stuff like that in the paper much then. But see, then in the church, if they asked for a testimony, and my mother, and that was a funny thing, she would tell how it happened, you know, just like that.
Well, and people could see the...
Yeah, they could see it, sure. And they praised the Lord, and it was just... It was wonderful, and but then every time that they had a conference, you know, or they wanted to help the people to know that God does answer prayer, and we have to have faith, and but then they'd ask different ones that had been healed, you know, there was older people that were healed of their eyesight and arthritis and I don't know what all, and they would stand up and testify, and then they'd ask my mother to come up. And it never failed. She said every time she was asked to do that, you know, she'd get up and she would tell how the Lord healed her little daughter. If it wasn't the same day, it was the next night or something, Ellen would have such pain in that ankle. And so she said, "I'm almost afraid to get up and testify and tell," because she said every time, and they said that that's just the devil. He's just trying to work so that you won't testify and that you won't believe. Just keep believing, they told her, and just thank the Lord that she's healed. So she did, but every time she said, Ellen would have such pain and her foot would hurt and boy, she'd have to lay down, you know. So,
it's strange.
It's a war, you know, between our salvation. And
she's still living out in California.
Oh, yeah, she's got 3 children, they're all grown and married.
Did she also become a member of the same kind of church?
Oh, yes, she sure did. Yeah, she was, and her husband too. She met him there, and yeah.
Oh, that's...
They still have those healing meetings, but it isn't the same as when I think that's the times we're living in too, that people just don't believe, they don't... But my mother had a lot of faith, and she said, "I know that the Lord can do that. He can do the impossible," and he sure did.
Yes, it sounds... how about the medical doctors now? Did they get involved with it and ask questions about what happened or
no,
looked at it?
No. That one that took the cast off of her when we came, I think she told him about it. He didn't, I don't know what he said because I wasn't there, but I mean, he knew it because she told him.
Well, he didn't want to discuss it.
Maybe not. Maybe he just, but he said, you know, he had said that that operation was not successful, and I guess it's really hard to operate on something like that, you know, where it was deformed, that's
yes.
What it was.
And there was no muscles developed?
No, I don't know, just...
Out of shape?
Out of shape, that's right.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. It shows what faith can do for you. You remained then in the Salvation Army.
I stayed there, and I went to the Salvation Army Training College in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to become a soldier, an officer.
Officer. Yep.
And they last a couple of years, or?
Well, I was in what they call a brigade at first with there was 4 of us, and then we had a leader.
You were not married at the time?
No. I was only, It was 17 or 18 when I went into training. 18, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But before that, then I was in the, they called it the Sunshine Brigade. It was four of us girls and then this lady that was our chaperone. And we went around and had meetings, revival meetings, and we sang. I played guitar and two others played the ukes, you know, or, mm-hmm. and then we all sang different parts.
And it was in Swedish?
Yeah, well, most of it was in Swedish, but no, not most of it, I wouldn't say that. It was English, more English than anything.
So you went to the college in the, or the Krigsskolan and
Chicago.
Were there at that time any Swedish training to sing and play and talk in Swedish there?
No, that was English.
Well, it was all English?
That was all English, oh yeah.
I see. So how about the Swedish then? What did you practice at? I mean, the new soldiers coming in to sing in the string band and play?
I never forgot Swedish. See.
And the one that joined, they all, most of them knew Swedish, so they didn't have to go any special.
No, the girls that were in the this brigade, we were all Swedish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we all sang Swedish and talked Swedish too. Yeah.
And after Chicago, then you came back to serve in different.
Well, I was on the
localities.
What they call on the field, you know. I was in. I guess 2 years. I know I was ready to be made a captain. I was a lieutenant, but then I was ready to be made captain. And then I had been going with, like my first husband there, Harold. I was. See, he was in Moline yet, and. Well, I just came back and decided to marry him. So then I became a soldier at the Corps. We were soldiers.
Well, I see. So you dropped your officers?
Oh, yeah. You have to. Unless you marry an officer, then it's...
Well, I see. You can marry
a soldier.
Officer.
No.
So love was stronger than the
I guess. I don't know. I didn't feel I did anything wrong, though.
No, of course, I suppose you have to, but they got to follow the same line then if you want to.
Oh yeah, they have their rules and regulations.
Oh. Yeah. Harold, your first husband, what year did he come to the United States?
What year?
Yes.
I think he came in 28.
So he was a few years later, and mm-hmm. he was in the 20s then when he came.
I think, yeah, he was 22, I believe.
He got a job then at one of the factories, or?
Yeah, well, he went to his aunt and uncle out in New Windsor. They had a farm out there. And he worked there for a year or so. And then he worked at other farms, too. But then he decided to go in to the shops. So he went into John Deere shop.
So you met during the Depression then, or after?
Yeah, we met, well, really, we were engaged before I went into training. And I gave him back the ring and everything, but and we got together afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So you married him, and you had a wedding ceremony at the Salvation
Army? Mm-hmm. We had a nice wedding, yeah. Well,
who was the leader in command at that time in Moline?
Well, let's see, who was it? I think it was Franfeldt. But Gabrielson, he was from Chicago. He was in charge of this division, and he married us, mm-hmm. Colonel Gabrielson.
And there was a busy time for Salvation Army during the Depression,
oh, yeah.
With the soup lines. And
yeah, that's right.
A lot of people in need. Mm-hmm. How about other churches now? Do you remember if they served any soup and food to people?
I don't think so. Not that I really know of, because the Army, you know, they do this. I mean, it's a social, it was like a social center. They had their soup lines and of course they got help from the city. So they did all this work, and that was a lot of work. And all the ones that worked for him, like Harold, he worked, he was in charge of them where they slept. You know, they had a building down on 4th Avenue, I think it was. And he was in charge of that. And then they had the soup, they had the different cooks, and all volunteers. I don't think anybody got anything except their food.
And that was every day?
Yeah, it was every day, yeah.
And they continued for 5-6 years?
Yeah, I don't know how long it was.
Long time?
Yeah, it was. It was.
So after you got married, and then you you moved together and never went back to work full time for the Salvation Army?
No, no. Well, we worked there as soldiers. I mean, we did, we sure did our work there. Boy, we worked like everything.
But then when you set up in the job market, your husband went back to...
He had to work in the shop.
The John Deere or...?
Yeah, John Deere. Plow and planter.
Mm-hmm. And you rented a house or you bought one at first?
We bought, we rented for, not even a year, I don't think. And then we bought a house on 13th Street and then he could, yeah, that was so close, he could walk down to work in the morning to the shop.
How about your parents now? Did your father have a steady job then in 1935, 36?
Well, he had his own, carpentry, construction work.
So he continued to build small houses? Or?
Yeah, he built small houses, he and my brother. And then when he was going to retire, he decided he wanted to go out to California. He always wanted to go to California. He said we should never have stopped in Moline. We should have just gone right out to California. But you know, with a family like that, it was kind of hard. My mother said, I can't do it. I have to, you know, wait till the kids get bigger. But we lived here until we were all raised and married.
And then they moved, the whole family except you?
Well, yeah, they moved gradually, one by one. My younger sister, Ellen, she's the one, her and her husband, I think it was them that went out there first. No, it wasn't. It was my brother Gus. They moved out there. First they went to Florida because they were so tired of this weather. They said, well, that weather, they didn't like the climate there too well. So they came back and then they went to California and they found that that was a place for them. They wanted to be. And then my younger brother, he decided to go out and see what it was like.
William or Ben?
Yeah, Bill. Uh-huh. And they went, you know, it's his birthday today. Only he's dead. He died 2 years ago.
Oh, I see.
But anyway, they went out, but they came back in a short time because they didn't like it. And then they went out again and came back, but the third time they stayed.
In what area of California?
It's all around L.A.
Oh,
L.A. So, yeah. It's, and then my dad, he said he'd like to go out and see what it was like, because my brother was urging him to come out. It was a lot of work out there, you know, and he didn't really care to work much, but he thought, well, if there's work and I'm healthy, I can do it, you know. So he worked out there quite a bit, too.
And he stayed on there also?
Mm-hmm.
Until he died?
And then my sister, one next to me, they stayed here 3 years after that. Oh, the rest of the family were all out there. And then they decided to go out. So it was just me, my family left here. Yeah. And I wanted to move, but we went out there, the whole family, 1 year, and nobody seemed to like it.
No.
So we came back and we just stayed here.
So your father and mother, now, did they both like it out there in California?
Yes.
Eventually?
They were, you know, kind of old when they moved out there. They, I don't know, what, close to 70, I think.
Oh, I see.
And
they didn't care to go back to Sweden. They never talked about that.
Well, they took their trip back to Sweden.
But never to stay, though.
No, they didn't want to go back to stay. But they thought that we'd all come out eventually. And I asked my dad when we were out there once, because we went out there. I said, how do you like it? I said, do you really like it and feel at home like you did? Well, he said, you know, when you're older, you don't make friends as much. But of course, he says, we have our church, and we have a wonderful church and church friends and people. But he said, it takes time to, because he said, the building even is different. You know, they build their houses different and they put them up different. And he said, you have to do that when you're where you are, you know, you have to do like they do. But he said, I wouldn't move now. I wouldn't move back to that winter there for anything. But he said, it took a while to get used to it. So they stay there and they're buried out there.
I see. Mm-hmm. So you and your husband and Harold, you had how many children?
We had three.
Three children?
Mm-hmm.
Did they stay in this area?
Oh yeah, you know, they all stayed. They're all here yet. They didn't want to go out. Well, they've all taken trips out there, but I mean they didn't want to move. So.
And he continued to work there, your husband, for John Deere.
Mm-hmm.
Until he retired.
No, he didn't retire there. We lived here in Moline, and he was his own contractor too. He was building we bought a place out on Campbell's Island, mm-hmm. and he reconstructed that whole house. He was going to tear it down, but he said it was too well built to tear down. And he fixed that up. He worked 9 months on that house before we moved in there. And then he decided he was going to quit. And no, that was a real home.
Your own home.
Mm-hmm.
So you moved there then to mm-hmm. Camp Lyons.
Yeah.
And you stayed there for a few years?
Yeah. We lived there. I lived there for 34 years. And
34 years?
Harold lived there 30 years. Then he died.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
And it is nice there in the summertime.
Oh, yeah. It's a...
And then I moved away from there.
Yep.
And then you met Walter.
We were known to each other before.
Well, because you worked at the Salvation Army as a soldier and in the 30s.
Yeah, I was in the service. I was all over then.
I know, but with the Salvation Army, wasn't you...
He was an officer.
No, you were an officer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
Then I come home and got married, and then I was here for... And you come home and get married?
Yeah.
You had the common interest and it was easy to get acquainted.
Yeah.
You didn't have to explain your religion to anybody.
No.
No. So right into another one. So, I mean, the same common goal. Yes, and now you are...
Although it was Scandinavian, I was Swedish then.
Yes.
It was a little different.
I asked your wife now about the... there was called the Scandinavian in Chicago then.
They called it Scandinavian, Salvation Army.
Swedes
and the Norwegians and the Danish.
Yeah. And Finns too. I think we're included a little.
I don't know if there was any Finns, was it?
Yeah, they had some up in the roots.
I bet you didn't have a Finnish corps.
No.
No. But I mean, in Chicago they had the Norwegian and the Danish, you know.
Yeah.
But that was about the only.
So the Swedes were in the majority then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, they had conquered the rest of it.
They conquered the rest of it. Without hiding a shop.
Yeah.
Yes, and so now you can look back on a fruitful life for the mankind and for the Lord.
Yeah.
I hope we've done something for the Lord.
Well, and you probably came at a time when there was a great need of the help.
Well, the Salvation Army, they worked with the poor people, you know, and then they had their own church, you know, and that, so it was a lot of happy years.
How did people contribute their offerings, like the church, you know, the Lutherans, they have the envelope system.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Salvation Army, do they also have an envelope system?
Yeah, they did.
You give every week?
Well, you give every month or every week or however you wanted to.
When did they start with that, in the 30s or 20s?
I don't know.
You mean with the envelopes?
Yes. Years ago they had the plate, you know, to pass it on.
Well, they give, you put your...
offering.
Or your envelope, whatever, if you were a member, you know.
But do you remember when they started with this envelope system in the Salvation Army?
Oh, that's many years ago.
Must be many years, because otherwise they wouldn't know how the members would give, you know. I don't know when they started.
I think it really was started because when you donated to your church and our religious organization, you could exempt it from your taxes.
Yes.
So then, in order to keep track of it, they would have to have a system within the church to... Mm-hmm. so they know how much was...
True, John. So we were traveling in the 26th hour then, because before it was no taxes.
The government.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yes, that's today.
It must have been in the 20s.
They have something to show.
That's right.
Yeah.
They checked up on me twice.
Well, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Well, I got out of it easy. I had everything right there. And I just had the copies made out of it and I sent it in.
Uh-huh.
They told me, you have to be careful because they're... Sometimes you don't send in the regular, you know, your real originals, but just get copies.
Yes.
Because sometimes they keep it and they just don't send it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. And the first time then they sent it back and with a little nice and little note and thanked me for being so cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
The second time then I got all mixed up. I got the wrong year. So the fellow, then I had to go down to the guy and he said, well, he said, you had everything here, he said, so why don't you send it in, maybe they'll accept it. He sent it in and that was it. They never bothered me after that.
Uh-huh. So they check up. Well, you probably gave great contributions and that's why they probably questioned it.
Well, I gave what I think that I was
yes,
should give.
That's right. Yes, that, yeah, that, some years ago now, the depression was on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had a trying time.
Yeah, when I think of it, all the old timers that were down there, I don't think there is hardly any left. Well, there is a couple of people.
There's a few, there's my brother-in-law.
Well, and my cousin. That's about it.
Well, and Grace and Lillian,
yeah.
And Carl Anderson was one.
That's his cousin.
Well, that's right, this is his cousin, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Now, he was in the 30s there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's... You didn't know what was a store for you when you left Sweden.
That's it.
If you've been always Sweden, you've probably been a ligemaker, what do you call it? Ligemakare. you had the skill to do it though.
What?
You had the skill to do it though, to get a liga.
Yeah, well, I helped my dad, but it wasn't, it kind of changed, you know, started to make them in little factories. So
yes. But the old-fashioned way, you know how to...
Oh yeah, my dad. He could never make enough to, because he always wanted to get a hold of his.
Oh, so he was actually an artist. He was one of a kind.
Those ones you bought in the store, they were not as sharp or not as good. And then there wasn't enough steel in them. He went over down about that much and there was no steel left, just plain iron. But when his... They were all the way through. You could have the way, so there was nothing left, but it still was sharp.
Your mother now, she died when she was 69.
She was 69.
And that was off in California.
Yeah.
And your dad, he died a few years later.
He died when he was 85. He remarried, you know, when a couple of years after my mother died, then he remarried. And, well, I think they were married 11, 12 years.
Okay. Was there a Swedish lady?
No.
No.
It was a relative to my sister Ellen's husband. It was his aunt. And they had known each other, too.
So he never came back to Moline, Illinois?
Oh, yeah, he came back to visit. Oh, yeah. But, never came back to live. Yeah.
Well, I think he liked California, didn't he?
They all like it.
Except you, huh?
They think we're crazy to stay here in Doctor's Paradise.
Did you stay in California or?
No.
Yeah.
I've never been in California.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in Florida a few times.
And you don't care about that kind of?
Yeah, I liked it down there, but we were all almost going to move down there, my first wife and I, but then. Didn't get there.
The hardest part is probably to get the friends. You need friends to call.
Well, I think when you're up in age, you know, like 60, 70, it's you don't make friends as easily, you know, unless you go to a church. And then you, but see, friendship, you know, is in the years that you lived. And of course, my mother and dad, they had a lot of good Christian friends there, because they were, they liked people and they mixed real well, and that. But
in Florida, that wouldn't have been hard to be down there. I know that the church we went to, but they were so nice.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If you go to a Christian church, like a, it's like a family.
I didn't miss it to pay it from a pay at all.
It's like a family. But you see, the folks in California, we were still here, and they missed us and their kids and that, you know, their grandchildren, and they just were wondering when we were going to come out. But my husband didn't want to move out there, and he said, I can't move away from my kids, and the kids didn't want to move. So we stayed here, and I guess it was some purpose for it.
So there where you met your Walter.
Yep. That's...
End our interview with Annalisa Johnson, Moline, Illinois. And we have 11th of March, 1986. End of interview.